This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the DRF Players Podcast. Our short hiatus is over. I believe this is show 249, and I believe that it is the July 6th edition, 2017 edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatel, back with you from the Edinburgh B&B, or the B&B Edinburgh, somewhere in the city of Edinburgh. Beautiful view looking out over the sunset. It is about 20 of 10 here now. It's going to be light for another hour. Just an amazing part of the world up here in Scotland. Had the pleasure the other day of going to Perth Racecourse. Beautiful, the northernmost course in the UK, and just a beautiful country racecourse. Great day out. Had a super fun time there. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. You can hear my daughter Perrin in the background, despite my trying to bribe her with all manner of television shows, treats, ice cream. She just can't stop making noise, folks. I'm sure those of you with kids can relate. Just going to have to deal with that as we go along here. Someone who's no stranger to the sounds of children in the background while recording a podcast is on the line with me. He is, of course, the People's Champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I got a little home field advantage. I have all the tools necessary to silence a five-year-old, so I have mine with me, but well equipped with pirate's booty, bootleg version of the movie Boss Baby, and he also has my iPhone, so he can download apps. I've added his thumbprint, so he can get all the ones that are free. He can't buy stuff, but he can get the free ones.
You don't even have to. You don't. Once you can sort of train them to put on their own shows, it is a wonderful thing. I do have that ability in the Brooklyn bunker, not so much here, halfway across the world, but still wouldn't trade the experience. It's been so great to be here. That Perth Racecourse, I will admit, I found the closest equivalent to the Paddock Bar. They had this amazing barn. They called it like the barbecue and beer barn. And you could see the horse from there. You could see the vantage point of the horses going out onto the course and going down to the start. There were two real ales on cask in the place. Pretty decent food. You could get your like pork sandwich, nice wooden tables to sit at, HD screens. I basically didn't want to leave. They only were running 7, and I wish they'd been running 17 because it was so pleasant just to sit there. I would definitely consider adding Perth Racecourse to your life list if you're a racing fan considering coming over here and spending any amount of time. It was really just a super fun day. So what's been going on with you, JK? You've been playing the horses at all back stateside? I haven't made a bet in the USA in a couple of weeks.
You mean am I sweating the you mean am I sweating the seventh at Indiana Grand right now? No, not at all. I wasn't saying I need it last weekend.
The contests.
Yeah, I got to spend my birthday at Santa Anita, and then afterwards we were going to go to the bowling alley as planned, but Tom Lute, I didn't really care. I just didn't want to sit at a two-hour dinner. Tom Lute kind of fought it a little bit. So we ended up going to the Dave and Buster's that's in the parking lot. Oh, there's an adult rooftop like bar. We went up there. We watched the Pacquiao fight. We did a random Los Al, even and odd betting. James Henry, Jason Avila, our friend Alexis came. Megan Devine, who people would know from the simulcast show.
Sure.
Leo came out.
I've never seen Leo out at night. That's impressive.
Yeah. Luke, Nate, Newbie, Aaron Veracruzzi came. Rick Hammerly. It was a nice little group. We had a great time hanging out up there on the roof, and it was a ton of fun. It was one of the best birthdays I've had in a long time.
That's awesome, man. I wish I could have been there. Of course, we spent that weekend along with our buddy Matt Bernier the last few years, closing weekend at Santa Anita when it's also been the Gold Cup. We've had a chance to hang out there and enjoy the contest. You got to be my man on the ground. We didn't, unfortunately, for whatever reason above my pay grade, never got to together where DRF was qualifying for this round of Santa Anita tournaments, as interesting as they sounded. So as a result, I didn't cover them. So I need you to give me the scoop, man. Who did what when?
Ooh. Oh, I know James Henry won on Friday.
Oh, nice. He was the outright winner. Didn't he run second to Stephen Thompson, The Undertaker?
He ran second on Saturday.
Oh, my gosh. So James won on Friday and was second on Saturday?
And was alive for a $50,000 bonus if he would have won on Saturday.
Oh, my gosh. I had no idea.
Yeah, Nate did a great job where if you won two of them, you got a $50,000 bonus. And then if you won three, you got like 200 or something crazy. I don't want to misquote it, but it was something special.
Well, Santa Anita, they just continue to be the market leaders when it comes to live bankroll play. Not only the VIP treatment they give their customers, but innovative ideas, whether it's the $1 million bonus, should players who win their contest go on to win the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, something that's also in place for Del Mar, contest we'll be talking about in a minute with the big weekend of action at DRF tournaments coming up, especially on Saturday, huge day. But no surprise, I suppose, that Santa Anita just continue to be innovative. Hopefully there'll be a way to get working with them more directly. But glad to get the report from you. Do you know who won on Sunday?
I don't know. Oh, you know what I do know? There is a female player that I don't know that was leading. Like, she had $20,000 and like next was like 12 or something. I don't know exactly because I wasn't there on Sunday. So, but David Landsman, who is of I Want Revenge ownership fame, hit like $1,000 cold trifecta.
Oh, I did hear that story. I did hear it.
and caught her and won the whole thing.
Oh my goodness. I didn't realize that that it was David Landsman, one of the more hilariously named horses of all time. He's responsible for it. Don't sell me to felons after the whole I Want Revenge, IEAH debacle, but that's a story for another time. But funny to see him do that. Now, let me ask you this. A lot of players will hate that story. And there are a lot of players who refuse to play in live bankroll contests that have trifectas because, and to me, it's overblown. Because yes, you do hear that story once in a while about somebody cold decking a try at the last race and winning. But you know, more often than not, as we've seen, even in contests with tries, the players typically win by making a big move in the win pool late on. I don't feel like it distorts the reality of the tournament that badly to have the tries in there. If people want to try to do that, you know, Godspeed, good luck to them. They're going to win some of the time. A lot of the time they're not going to win, and they're just feeding the prize pool for everybody else. But what's your attitude about trifectas in these live bank events?
I mean, was the leader allowed to make $1,000 cold pick trifecta? I mean, I don't have a problem. I don't think anything's unfair if I'm allowed to do it too.
Right.
Because really what we're talking about here, and not to get too like, you know, over the top with, you know, theoretical, but like really what we're talking about is that a man where $1,000 doesn't matter and to someone where $1,000 does matter. It's not fair to condemn someone for that $1,000 not mattering, because there's a ton of people that were playing in that tournament that had $1,000 and they took their $1,000, they put it in their pocket, and they used the Uber code to get home. Like, you know what I mean? So it's not, to me, it's not, it's for no one to judge. If he does that every time, he's not going to be a rich person very long. So, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate if you're in the lead and you had a great day and someone nailed you like that, but I'd be bummed out, but I wouldn't.
I think that another thing to note in this situation is that, now I don't have the prize structure in front of me, but I don't believe it's like particularly top heavy. That would be particularly gutting in a contest like the Breeders' Cup betting challenge or one of these contests where so much money is disproportionately weighted to the top slot. Typically in the Santa Anita contest, the difference, there'll be a big difference or a significant difference between first and second, but it's not like a life-changing difference between first and second. So that longtime leader, I'm sure, still got compensated for her big day of winning.
I mean, to me, it's the same thing as like someone betting $1,000 to win on a 99-1 shot. It's like, you know, I mean, would you have the same annoyance to someone doing that?
I mean, I don't have annoyance at all, but I think those players, I don't know. The tournament, we know, look, we love tournament players, but tournament players will complain about anything. So you can't, as a group, there's just no way. I mean, the truest words ever spoken about tournament play, you can't please all of the people all of the time. I, at my first NHC, I remember having these conversations successively, and it was almost like someone had put the players up to it to come up to me, because it would be one saying, okay, we need to have more optionals, and the other being like, no optionals. There need to be a lot more mandatories, and just all these conflicting pieces of advice that were completely contradictory. And that's what people who put on tournaments have to deal with, is a lot of people with very different interests, and you're trying to just come up with formats that please the most of them. To me, trifectas make sense to include. They're going to encourage handle. They're going to encourage people taking shots. I have no problem with it. But I do know for a fact there's a small percentage of people, many of whom I've spoken to in my trips out there, who will tell me straight up, I'm not playing in this tournament because there are trifectas in it. And I think they're thinking of instances like this. But, I mean, for you, it sounds to me like what you're saying, JK, is as long as the rules are the same for everybody, you're, you know, your game, play ball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it. I mean, I don't, you know, I would rather it not happen to me. And I don't think I would play it that way, but I, you know, kudos to someone who does.
Were designing the rules, though, if you were anointed tournament king, and you were to make rules for live bankroll contests, would you leave trifectas in?
Yeah, I think that's an important part of the game.
Yeah,
you know, I used to play a lot of trifectas, and I've stopped. You know, I've, you know, in fact it was Duke Matisse and I. They had a tournament at Santa Anita. I don't remember when it was, but I was here at home and Duke called me. He's like, hey, do you want to split an entry? And I was like, sure, yeah, whatever. So we split one. I played with him from here. And every time I wanted to play a try, Duke was like, why don't we just play the exacta and bet like blah, 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 bet more and have rather have a $100 exacta than a $10 try. And it just took me a long time to realize that like that makes so much more sense. And the fact that the exacta pool is not a blind pool, you can see with the probables, you can be more efficient, and it's less guessing and hoping and disappointment when the tote board flashes your trifecta payoff. You don't have to do that annoying thing where you call your friend and you say, look, 9-2 over 9-5 over 25-1. What's the try pay? What's the try pay? You know, and then you're like, and your friend bets $650 and you're like, they paid $300, and then you're up in arms about how the pool, you know, so I just assume skip all that jazz.
The exception, I think, are two things. One, if you have a horse to try to key in that third spot, as we've talked about, particularly a long shot, we see these long shots running every day that have just so much of a better chance to finish third and fourth. If you want to key one of them in third, then you're taking advantage of what's unique about the tri pool, that fact to pick the horse to run third, as opposed to just what I think you're saying to avoid is avoid playing the tri when it's just an extension of the exacta. In that case, just bet more in the exacta. The other instance I'd mentioned, pretty obvious, but I think it's worth noting anyway, when you can play a favorite completely out that you just hate, that you know a lot of people are going to be at least saving with in that third slot, that could maybe create an inefficiency where the try would still be a pool I would gravitate towards. But I'm with you, JK. I think when it comes to live bankroll play, I want to keep it as simple as possible. If I can play a win bet, I want to play a win bet. If I need to go to the if I need to go down to another pool to maximize my opinion, I'm okay with going to the exact or extending down to the try. But you want to keep it as simple as possible and express your opinion in as efficient a way as possible.
And I think if you really are a trifecta player, And not that Pete and I can't obviously have an intelligent conversation about the trifecta, but one of the most masterful people I've ever seen at the trifecta that you could access easily on Twitter. Just don't tell him we sent you his way with all the questions. Is Nick Tamro? He is phenomenal with what he can do and how he builds trifecta tickets. I mean, I think that the year that he ran fourth in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, I think he hit seven trifectas over those 3 days. If it's not seven, it was six.
I think it was seven, but I think it was only 2 days.
2 days, excuse me.
Yeah, so it was an incredible performance. Yeah, some people's brains are just wired to sort of intuiting where the value is. For me, a lot of the times I'm with you, JK, if you can do it more simply, do it more simply. Why do you have to make life more complicated than it needs to be? Let's talk a little more tournaments. Then we're going to eventually turn the conversation to the stakes-laden Stars and Stripes card at Belmont on Saturday. But coinciding with that, three big deal tournaments on DRFT this weekend. We've got a grade one qualifier for the World Championship of Handicapping. This is an opportunity to just buy in directly. You can continue to try to feed in by putting up 95, and 1 in 7 will advance to the Saturday qualifier. If you don't want to mess around with that, or you've tried and haven't gotten in, and you still want to participate, for 580, you'll have a 1 in 10 chance to win your $5,000 buy-in for this tournament. It is going to be $1 million, assuming full participation of 200 and no takeout. Those words I know have gotten a lot of tournament players very excited and circling this one on their calendars to participate in. So that's one. We've also got events for the Wynn Challenge, August 4th and 5th at the Wynn Las Vegas. Mythical Money focusing on Del Mar and Saratoga. Double bet each day. No leaderboard. Lots of interesting quirks in the Wynn contest. A lot of tournament players participate in that one every year. Sort of an old school Vegas contest, a major that you want to take a look at out in the desert. And then we've got the Del Mar contest on, I said it incorrectly, I don't think it was on this show, I think it was on BIC last week, I had it the wrong weekend. It's July 29th and 30th, two-day live bank event, $7,000 buy-in, but you can win that plus $500 in travel on DRF tournaments this weekend. I highly recommend folks get involved. I wrote a little piece this week for DRFT about multi-tabling, the practice of playing in more than one contest at once. I think this weekend on DRF tournaments, a perfect opportunity to get involved in that. There's some other contest activity going on around the country.
Yeah, well, before you get to Del Mar, the wise guy tip for Del Mar for the tournament. For one, I talked about it before, the room that they sit you in for the tournament, it's one of the best rooms, like the best views. It's like at the I would say a little bit further up the stretch than the 16th pole, but you're on the 6th floor. It's an unbelievable view. You get there, you know, you get up early, you handicap, you go to the brig, you have a couple appetizers, you come play in the tournament. Then after the races are over, you walk across the street to the Hilton, and you hang out in that bar area of the Hilton. It's a horse players who's who, especially tournament weekend. I mean, I remember that's the first weekend I ever met Jenny King and Ken McMahon sitting around that fire, and Ray Arsenault. And you sit around there, and then you know there's a million great places to have dinner in Del Mar. And then if you're a night owl, you can meet all of us over at what's it called? I think it's called Jimmy O's.
Sean
Turner. We always try to stick him with the tab there, so that's always fun too. So that's your San Diego wise guy tip. I thought I'd give that out for free.
That's San Diego Sean Turner, not to be confused with Maryland Sean Turner, right?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I used to text Sean and be like, Sean, I can't believe you just won that seat. And they're like, nah, that wasn't me.
And they spell it the same too, and it's not the more common Sean, right? I think they're both S-H-A-W-N. There's another phenomenon like that in contest play with John Conte. Of course, the champ, John Conte, was a member of the Horse Players cast, but apparently there's another one who I think at some point I mistakenly reported on, thinking it was the Long Island John Conte. It's confusing. Thankfully for us, there's only one Jonathan Kinchin, at least as far as we know.
Yeah, you know what there is, though? There's a Robert C. that plays in Austin, Texas. And my business partner, best friend, Robert Chow, I always thought that – I'm like, Robert, you didn't tell me – well, you don't need my help. You didn't even call me to see if I like somebody. Another guy.
Cases of mistaken identity all over the place. So, yeah, apologies, folks. I know I had said originally there was going to be a show this Tuesday. That was before I realized that was the 4th of July. We had nobody to help us back at the studio running around. This is the best internet I found in Scotland. It was pretty dire up there in the when we were up towards the Highlands. We were looking for just mess around on the phone and get some internet. And I mean, the speeds, we're like looking at networks, cellular networks that haven't been seen in the United States in 10 years and Wi-Fi signals that are, you know, you'd be upset if that's what you were getting on your phone. So it's been a little tough, but thanks for sticking with us. I know we've had some questions come in. If I get a chance during the course of this show, maybe I'll dig and try to find a couple of those. I didn't, unfortunately, get organized quite as well as I should have. I don't have anything prepared, but we'll get to your questions in the coming weeks. For sure, our audience always delivers some pretty good ones. Have you seen anything out there on Twitter or in email, JK, that was begging to be answered?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, nothing that stuck out to me.
I did have one come in. This was an interesting question from Peter. Just recently got into handicapping and has had some success identifying winners, but has been having trouble translating that to parimutuel success. He says, last week he handicapped a 10 race card, got it down to 3 horses per race, and had 7 winners, which is terrific in top 3 selections out of those 30 choices, but just had trouble. You know, he was betting too many horses and having trouble translating. You know, 7 winners, you should have you'd like to think you'd have a winning day. Any advice for our friend Peter?
Yeah, I would do that experiment again this weekend, but I would limit yourself to a number that is around 20% of the field, right? Like if you're using 3 horses in a 6 horse field, that can sometimes be misleading. So I would try to pare that down a little bit, I think, to get a little bit of a clearer picture of exactly what you're doing. And if I lost you with the math there, then I would at least just pick 2 horses in each race instead of 3 and see how you end up there.
That's an interesting idea. Another thing I'll say, and this might be more math than somebody wants to do, but it is an interesting experiment. We've talked before about the concept of dutching, where if you like multiple possibilities, you play them all, but you don't just play we'll use a win Dutch for an example. I was messing around with some of these at Perth the other night, actually, where if I like 2 horses, I'm not just going to bet 20 and 20 on them. I'm going to, based on what price they are, I'm going to make bets to try to get the same return. So I'm just going to make up some numbers here. But let's just say 1 horse is 2-1 and 1 horse is 8-1. Maybe of that same $40, I'm going to take 30 of it and bet it on the shorter price and just 10 of it and bet it on the longer price. Well, you could, even with 3 selections, you could use the same theory and you could try to calculate what you're going to bet and what your possible return is, and then look at your sort of opinion of the race in aggregate. Sometimes you're going to like 3 horses in a race and you're still going to be getting 3 or 4-1 back. And in that case, I'm fine with that. There's other times where it's a short field and you like 3 horses and they're the 3 favorites and you're going to bet 40 and you're only going to get back 50. You know, you're only going to be getting a long, you know, something long odds on 1-4 or whatever. That's a situation where you're either going to want to keep grinding on your handicapping and eliminate one of those horses to improve your odds, or you're just going to say, you know what, I'm going to pass on this race. So that would be another idea and another way of possibly approaching it. So hopefully that advice will point Peter in a direction you can report back on if any of that was helpful at all, or feel free to ask us a follow-up question. We'll take questions via Twitter. I'm at Looms Boldly. JK is at UT Big Hair. You can also hit us up on our podcast email, which I check personally. That's podcast@drf.com. We got another question about Equestricon. Is this something worth checking out? You know, I can't swear by my life that it's going to be like the greatest thing ever. This is the first one after all. I don't really know what it's going to be like, but I will say this, I'm excited to participate in it. And anytime you get a lot of horse players together, you typically will find funny stories and good times and interesting information. So I would definitely want to roll the dice on Equestricon. I'm not just saying that because I'm involved, but it just seems like the kind of thing I'd want to check out anyway. I know we talked about this a little bit the other week, JK, but I can't remember what you said. I know you're involved in the tournament panel that I'm hosting. You're doing something else as well, though, right?
Yeah, I think just like a plain handicapping thing as well, and then also a winning on big days or big scores on big days or something along those lines.
But Jonathan, how plain can it be if you're involved?
Well, I mean, just like there's no topic, more specific topic.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time. All right, why don't we talk about some of these Belmont races? How much digging have you done? I'll admit I did some digging on the Euros. I looked over the races. I've probably only spent about an hour on them so far. I need to do a little bit more. Folks interested in a deep dive on these races can check out a show that will be archived by the time this podcast goes live that I'm going to be doing with Andy Beyer and Andy Serling. You won't be able to join live, but you can check out the archive, drf.com/YouTube. I'm going to get those guys' opinions on all of the stakes races at Belmont on Saturday. JK, have you had a chance to check these out?
Yeah, no, I've blasted through them. A little bit deeper than blasting. They're pretty straightforward races, to be honest. But
we've talked about this before. When we have this time of year, when most of the races we're talking about on the show are stakes races, you get a certain familiarity and comfort level with the horses where it takes less time than it does looking at some random allowance race in the winter where you have to watch all the tape and you're sort of starting from scratch. We've got so many notes on these horses and we start to form opinions almost like we do on our favorite sports teams that I think definitely the opinions come a little bit quicker. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them, it's like, I could stare at the race for 14 hours, and it doesn't, you know, there's no scenario in which I don't use Yoshida as an A horse. I don't care what I look at. It's just, that will never change.
We'll get there. Let's start off, though, with race 6 on Saturday at Belmont. It is the Grade 3 Dwyer. This is the return to the races of Practical Joke, first race since the Derby. Battalion Runner, who you were so unimpressed by in the wood, and I had to make fun of you when you claimed that he did no running getting his second in the Grade 2 there. He's back in this spot. He's actually the morning line favorite over Practical Joke. Some other ways you can go, but it seems to me like most of the betting action is going to boil down to those two. Is it one of them for you, JK, or did you go in another direction?
Yeah, I you look back through the PPs, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, I said, doesn't want to go two turns, can't win that race. Fountain of Youth, I don't think he wants to go two turns. Ran well, I didn't think he won that race. Bluegrass, no way, no shot, can't go two turns, ran well. Kentucky Derby, no shot, ran well. So now he's going one turn, I think he's going to win for fun. The only negative part about it is just the pace scenario. True Timber should be loose out there on his own, but I would imagine that Joel will keep him close enough, and I think he's going to be really tough in this spot, finally doing what I think a lot of people thought he always should be doing, and that's 1 mile, returning to the scene of his last win, which happened to be a Grade 1 in the Champagne.
You don't think Battalion Runner will be on the lead here?
No. No, he could be.
Yeah, I mean, he's led at sprints before. I mean, I agree on pace figures. The Timeform U.S. pace projector is going to agree with you about who's going to be on the lead here. But I just don't think that Battalion Runner, he doesn't strike me as one that's going to get grabbed. So I was thinking also Practical Joke could get a really nice trip here.
Yeah, no, I mean, if they go, then I think he's in an even better position. But in a small field like this, it doesn't feel like there's going to be a lot of reason for them to cook each other up, especially with, and I know this is, I don't like to get too into the weeds on this, but there's no reason for Johnny and Javier to ding dong like that and Johnny and Javier to to duel Todd's horse into submission. It just feels like one of them's going to break, the other one will sit off, and then here we go.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would use Practical Joke the most, for sure, and you know, might include Battalion Runner as more like a B. Would you do anything with anybody else in here? Or actually, would you even use Battalion Runner as a B?
No, I would not use Battalion Runner as a B. I thought the five, I have no idea.
Giuseppe the Great, come on.
Giuseppe the Great, yeah. Well,
that's not okay. A hard one.
I think he ran pretty well in the Woody Stevens, and I think he's one that could be one to be reckoned with, but it's going to be all Practical Joke for me. Unfortunately, I think that the pick five is only available on Naira Betts.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Naira Betts are sponsoring, in fact, that the webinar that I'll be doing with Andy Byron and Andy Serling. And that's one of the aspects we're going to be talking about. You've got, I mean, I know it doesn't do you any good, JK, in Texas, but if you're, it is eligible nationwide in places where ADW betting is legal. So I think this is going to be the thing that gets a lot of people over the hump to participate in Naira Betts. And I wonder what effect it's going to have on, I mean, it's obviously still going to be a fairly big pool, and I think it's going to be a pretty smart pool, but I wonder if there aren't going to be some opportunities because of the restrictions. I don't know. I'm very intrigued, and it's definitely something that's going to be encouraging people to go out there and get that done.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's going to be interesting having a pool restricted to just one kind of situation.
So for you, though, Lone A, Practical Joke, no backups. I mean, Giuseppe the Great, I mean, I get it for third or maybe even second, but I can't have him win. Can you?
I mean, I could see him win just because, you know, Battalion Runner doesn't have to win. True Timber doesn't have to win. And Practical Joke could be, you know, looking for a big summer, you know, and maybe a mile's still too long for Practical Joke. I don't think it's true, but there's a world in which that could happen. He ran well. He ran well in the Woody Stevens.
Yeah, no, he did. I don't know. I my gut was telling me it was a little more of a picking up the pieces than a gonna beat Practical Joke type of an effort. But hey, as a backup, why not? I mean, I'm not gonna try to talk you out of it. That was just my gut on the situation. Let's move on to the seventh race. It's the Grade 2 Belmont Sprint. What'd you come up with here?
Mind Your Biscuits ran so impressively at Dubai. I mean, I was interested there, but I think one of the things you got to keep in mind is a lot of, especially in New York, maybe more than other places, or maybe I'm just forgetting that, but it feels like earlier in the year, a lot of the races they run are at 6 furlongs in New York. This is at 7, and I feel like Mind Your Biscuits is just might be pointing to bigger and better things throughout the season.
You're breaking up on
for him.
Breaking up on me a little bit, JK. Do we have you back?
Here, yeah. No, just saying that Mind Your Biscuits feels like this could be kind of a prep. I'm going to use Mind Your Biscuits as an A, but I'm going to give Unified another shot. I feel like Unified's going to be a perfect trip, sitting right off of Green Grotto, who, you know, obviously beat him last time in the Carter. I think he'll sit right off of him, draw on the outside with Jose Ortiz, who's slowly become my East Coast Mike Smith, and I would think that he'll get a good trip in here, and he'll probably get the jump on Mind Your Biscuits. So Unified for me.
Those recent works definitely stand out. I was going to just try to play Unified and Mind Your Biscuits as A's, not exactly splitting any atoms here, but that was my thought, to just try to get out and survive. Anything clever for you in terms of backups? Any stall-walking dude? Any Tommy Macho?
No, I think Stall Walking Dude is interesting, but his best races seem to happen around 6. I'm not saying he's never won at 7, but his best races seem to happen at 6. And you know, as good as Flavian Pratt is, you know, you wonder if he's going to get lost out there going 7 at Belmont. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a big old oval, and I feel like there could be a mistimed ride there, and I think you're going to need kind of perfect timing in this spot with that horse. So he can definitely win. I'm a big fan of the horse, but Unified for me. I'm against Awesome Slew a little bit.
Tell me about that. Horses run pretty well in the last within this form cycle anyway. What's the case against them?
Yeah, I just thought that he had a favorable setup, obviously, at Keeneland. being on the outside on what was definitely an outside favoring day. And then on Derby Day, he wasn't all the way down on the inside, but he came running late when they went pretty quick in front of him. It was a fast pace, got kind of another setup there. I don't envision he'll get the same setup in this spot.
Yeah, and obviously coming off that Met Mile, which I suppose you could excuse for being too long or off the two other huge races. But yeah, I'm really going to just try to get out with those two unified Mind Your Biscuits and hope for the best. Let's move on to the eighth race, the Belmont Oaks. Some interesting foreign participation in here, though I guess what I want to say is about this race is I wish Sister Charlie was drawn a little bit inside. Some great work by Rob Dove getting sectional times. This race, the Group 1 Prix de Diane, she came home in the last three furlongs in sub 34. I mean, this is quickening. This is finish. She could just have this field at her mercy. And I'm going to play it at least a little bit with that in mind. But I don't think I want to stand alone because of the depth of the field and the difficulty of that post position potentially. But that's a Euro you don't want to be leaving out.
Yeah. I mean, this is the classic Empire thing when I don't remember what race it was. I guess it was the Breeders' Futurity last fall as a 2-year-old. And, he had drawn the 11 hole, but he looked like he was the best and blah. And I kind of said, I just feel like those are the kind of spots you can really have some value when other people are trying to get cute. When there's three other Chad Browns in the race and another Aiden O'Brien, a Graham Motion, there's horses that are going to get played in here. I mean, I hate to sound bullish, but I don't see how she loses. I don't think. They can put her in the 15, and I still don't think she's going to lose. Did you watch the replay?
No, I haven't seen it. I'll be honest. I was relying on Dove's info on that.
Oh, my God. With Dove's info, watch the replay. She 17 times. Wow. And got banged around, and then looks like she's going to fifth. And then she surges in the last 16th. I know the last 16th over there, so I've probably come up with something different. But it runs second. And if she came home that fast after that much, she can't lose this race.
All right. Well, there you go. If you were to back up with anybody, who would it be?
If I'm going to back up, I'll just ask for some more Sister Charlie.
I mean, the JK version of backing up. You are busting up on me. You're busting up on me pretty bad, JK. Now, it's probably me and the bad Scottish internet. But you know what? I'm going to try to reconnect with you while I talk to the people for a minute here. So just hang on a second. Maybe if I reconnect with JK, we can get a little bit better of a connection and have a smoother conversation the rest of the way through here.
I'm back. No, I love her. I would use her twice. If I was in a backup, I would use the 9 Dynatail. Got a big time form U.S. figure, back-to-back 2 time form U.S. figures going a mile on the turf at Pimlico and Penn National. I'd give her a little bit of a shot at what should be a pretty big price.
You're thinking maybe a wire job on Dynatail?
Absolutely. You mean there's a chance that a horse is going to wire on the grass at Naira? No.
Well, you have a foreign horse in here who should be there to keep her company and key to my heart, who I think is probably not good enough, but that Oaks trial was good enough. If there was no Sister Charlie and if Dynatail wasn't in the race, I might be looking to key to my heart to wire if I had to throw a backup in there, using way less, but if I had to throw somebody in there, it might be key to my heart, but does not look as nearly as strong, obviously, as Sister Charlie, who's the selection for both JK and for me in the Belmont Oaks. Let's move on to the Grade 2 Suburban. Your old buddy Keen Ice makes his return to the races. Matt King Cole shows up in this spot, but I think a lot of people are going to be circling number six, Shaman Ghost, and saying, hey, he's the third best older horse right now, and the rest of these are running for second. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I just don't see how that horse gets beat in this spot. I mean, I don't see who beats him. He doesn't have to be super far back. He can be close enough. The distance isn't a problem. He's got a great trainer, a great rider. He's drawn outside. He didn't have to do anything he doesn't want to do. It's his home track. There's a million things, and I just, you know. I mean, I guess Matt King Cole could win this race, you know, and wire the field. I just don't think I'm really that interested in that. How aggressive is Irad going to be from the inside? Keen Ice, I mean, I watched a workout with Keen Ice and Battalion Runner, and Keen Ice kind of got after him, but it wasn't like it was overly impressive. I guess he could win. Jose might actually put him in the race. This might save Keen Ice's kind of pluggy issues from always being off of the pace. I mean, Jose could put him into the race early, but I just don't see how Shaman Ghost gets beat. I'm going to save a little bit. I'm going to use as a backup Follow Me Krev. That horse was eliminated at the start last time at the Gold Cup at Santa Anita when Cupid got away. The problem is that they kind of ran a little bit, so the horse kind of got a setup after missing the break. But I've always thought Follow Me Krev is a little bit sneaky. He's a California horse that you'll see a claiming line if you go deep enough. So I think maybe people might ignore him a little bit. I think he could be a little bit of a price. So Follow Me Krev is another one that I'd consider.
The race that slows me down on Follow Me Krev is just the Santa Anita handicap with Shaman Ghost on Follow Me Krev's turf and handling so easily. I guess you could look at Shaman Ghost no-show in this race last year and try to make some sort of case, but I think he was found out to be sick after that performance. I'm imagining it's all systems go now. I would say that 90% of my action or more will just flow through Shaman Ghost, and we'll see if I can get away with that approach here. Keen Ice, you know, cool, super cool horse. Seeing him staying on for a piece of the pie would be no surprise at all. I'm not sure I'm going to see him as being value, though, in this spot against the likes of Shaman Ghost. But, of course, always rooting for our buddy Elliot Honecker. And even when he costs us oodles of money, as he's wont to do, it's still always nice to see his colors in the winner's circle as part of that Donegal Racing partnership. Race 10 is the Belmont Derby. You've already tipped your hand in this one, JK. We talked a little while ago, though, about somebody had asked us Yoshida heads up against Euro. And at the time, you were hesitant to take Yoshida in such a matchup. Now, having handicapped the race, are you going to backtrack on that one?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm more concerned about those green and yellow colors. It cost me a lot of money to beat Yoshida.
Speaking of Elliot Honecker.
absolutely.
Yeah, who's also
our listeners have obviously remember when we were lucky enough to have Sean Tugel on at Windstar Farm. I text Sean when I saw the overnight and asked him, you know, please tell me Joel didn't get off of Yoshida. And it wasn't a Joel getting off. It was a Joel being committed to Good Samaritan situation. So don't look too far into that if you're trying to play the jockey musical chairs game. Yoshida for me, obviously, based on the performance last time and just the type of horse I think that he is. But I'm going to use Arklow as an A horse as well. That race was impressive. Yes, he was on the outside of that turf course, which was obviously better than the inside. But he still lost a ton of ground, ran really well against really good horses. And I think that he's one that is going in the right direction, and he's one that I would definitely keep an eye on. I'm going to use Good Samaritan and Oscar Performance as kind of backups there. Good Samaritan I feel bad saying this, but I might have to induct him into the Chandelier Hall of Fame if he doesn't get it together.
Oh, that's not fair. That's not fair at all. He has valid excuses for his last two. If it wasn't for my love for Yoshida, I mean, I'd be happy to make him my top pick in here. I mean, I still like Yoshida better, and more of my play will go through Yoshida. But, I mean, American Turf, was that weird course. he wasn't on a bad part of it. He was out wide where he wanted to be, but, you know, had every license to be short. And then, you know, Oscar Performance just went out and waltzed by himself, and he, Good Samaritan was getting into the race. To me, it was just such an unfavorable setup, and I think he just shapes like a horse who's going to want a mile and a quarter. I mean, I don't think you'll see the 12 to 1 of the morning line, but I mean, at 12 to 1, I mean, I'd like him almost, I would like him as much as Yoshida at the price that Yoshida's going to be. If he can be sort of a forgotten horse and others are taking that cynical view, JK, you can give me Good Samaritan as much as I like Yoshida. I really like those two. I think if I'm going to save with a European, it's actually not going to be one of the O'Brien runners. Dub's point about them, both of them, which I thought was pretty good, is, you know, you wouldn't think about them for a second if it wasn't the name Aidan O'Brien in the program. The form's just not good enough. But there are some interesting aspects to Call to the Bar. So I could also see playing a Saver Exacta with Call to the Bar over, just one way, Call to the Bar over Good Samaritan and Yoshida. Good Samaritan and Yoshida to win. I get it about Arklo. I think if I'm playing multi-race wagers, I would certainly have him as a B. I don't think Oscar Performance is going to get the setup this time. I think that just for me, I mean, if I were playing some big ticket, if I had some super clever opinions elsewhere, I'd have absolutely no problem including him as a backup. The way that it's looking for me like I'm going to play this sequence, I think the value is just going to be in opposing him, and that's what I was thinking of doing. And Arklo, again, I get it. 8-1 would be too big a price. At that price, I might change around and use him saving on top as well in those exactas. But I think for me, it's basically all about it's all about Team WinStar. Let's see if we can get one in here.
Sorry, I got a water spilled alarm go off, so I missed the last piece of that. No, I mean I don't think the Aidan O'Briens are overly exciting either. You know, especially after watching Royal Ascot, and you see that those are all the good ones, and these are just kind of the leftovers. But Oscar Performance is one that I'm gonna respect a little bit because, you know, we had a note that in the Transylvania that he didn't like the soft going. And then the American Turf, he was down on the inside. Then he comes back and runs well. So I'm going to forgive him. I know we were wondering, did he not move on from 2 to 3? But I think he'll be okay. And he's one that I'll use underneath a little bit, especially with that, you know, that angle of him actually having an opportunity to be loose.
Yeah, it is possible. I don't think Call to the Bar will let him be loose. I think Call to the Bar will be ridden aggressively. But I could be wrong about that. We'll see. I mean, French riders aren't exactly known for their super aggressiveness. Did you look at the time form pace projector in this one? Do they have Oscar Performance by himself?
Yeah, they have him loose with Arklo sitting right off of him, which I think is a perfect spot for Mike to be.
Cool. Well, it should be a very fun day of racing on Saturday, that's for sure. I wish I could be there. Going to still be hanging in London. I'll just be watching via simulcast. It might be fun, though, to go down to the bookies with the European participation. I expect there'll be some books pricing this up and maybe have a chance to sneak a little bit of a number on these American horses, which I wouldn't mind doing at all. So that's on my agenda for things to do in London on Saturday.
Are they kind of like us? Will they just blindly bet Aidan over here? Or?
That's a great question. I mean, I think there are some who do that. I've heard there are people who will just blind bet him pretty much anywhere, any place. And I would assume shipping to the USA, they might think they're getting some kind of advantage doing that, or at least taking a look at the opportunity to bet on the tote if that price is going to be longer than the bookie. So, you know, I do think there's a chance that a horse like Yoshida, I'm pretty much going to guarantee anybody pricing it up over here is going to have higher than what Yoshida will be on the tote. Because I think so many people have seen what we've seen. And I think, what's Yoshida on the morning line?
7-2, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Don't you think he might even be shorter than that? It was a pretty visually arresting performance.
Yeah,
last time.
No, I do think he will be. But it's an 11-horse field, and let's just think who's going to take money. I mean, I would think Big Score will take money. Yoshida, Arklo, all of the Euros, except for maybe White Cliffs of Dover, maybe
I think
not.
He'll still be single digits, you know, coming out of a group three. I mean, coming out of a group three, you can excuse the race for White Cliffs of Dover. I don't really like him. And I don't think he wants to. It's a very odd to me to be running this horse at 10 after, based on the form. I mean, I guess if you go back to the Legendaire, you know, that mile effort was pretty nice. Maybe you can make a case, but it's not. It's just, I don't know. But I still think the horse will be, I'm not interested, but I think that's single digits. Big score is actually 20 to 1 on the morning line. What do you make of that?
I mean, he disappointed me at the American Turf, but he ran well enough in the Penn Mile, kind of closing into to moderate fractions. The point that I wanted to make was that Good Samaritan and Ticonderoga, I mean, they both feel like they have to be single digits.
Yeah, I mean, Ticonderoga's been bet every time. The Chad Brown factor, I mean, just right there with Oscar Performance and Good Samaritan. Boy, I do not envy trying to make a morning line on this race. It's impossible. It's just hard to know how people are going to bet. It's a very good race for somebody who wants to take a pure value point of view and just hang up your own odds line on horses in this race. I mean, I guess you're right. I mean, Yoshida can't be less than 3, can he?
No, I don't think so. Not Ticonderoga was closing into that slow pace. Good Samaritan, people are still chasing that horse off of his trip in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, I feel like there has to be, something's got to give there.
Holmesman might not be 4 to 1. I just don't think the form is good enough. I get the guess. I'm not criticizing the line exactly. Like I just said, it's so hard to make a line, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if that horse is more like 6 or 8 to 1. So that's some of the, that accounts for some of the line movement that you and I are anticipating, but it's going to be really, it's going to be interesting. If we think about it on Saturday night, maybe we should send some tweets about what we think about the actual betting, and I could update people on what, you know, maybe send around, if it's on Odds Check or something, I can send around the line of what the UK betting is. Who knows, there might be an opportunity for some arbitrage between the two markets. I know we do have plenty of listeners in the UK and Ireland, so that might be of interest to them, and we can see if there's anything clever we can do putting some stuff together with this Belmont Derby. It's a cool race. I mean, I when the super cards sort of first came in, I wasn't initially all about them. You know, I was worried about some of the races that weren't going to be featuring their own weekend days at Belmont, etc. But when you get a chance to look at a card like this, it's really a card for a horse player to go out of the way to play. And I do get the whole super card thing more now that we're in the, whatever it is, the third or fourth year of it, especially with races that have really been created out of nothing like the Belmont Oaks and Derby. I kind of dig it. Where do you stand with that whole phenomenon?
Oh, I think they're great. I love both of those races, and I don't mind the super days. I enjoy those days. It's especially in a world where our attention is being driven in so many different places. I think it's great if you can kind of have a day where you can get everyone's eyes and everyone can make it a special day, and you can, and all of our good horses and our good horsemen and our good jockeys can show up in one place and everyone can absorb them in a 5-6 hour span rather than asking them to do that over 4 or 5 days and, you know, spread out throughout the year.
Yeah, well, we're going to have another one coming up, not too distant future. You'll be on hand for it. Rumor has it August 4th or August 5th it'll be, the Saturday in Saratoga. I'm pretty sure that Whitney card is going to end up being loaded. Travers, of course, always amazing in New York. Tell me about how you're feeling on the eve of the summer meets Del Mar and Saratoga this year. What are you most looking forward to about your summer plans? And do you do anything special to prepare for these meets?
Not necessarily. I mean, I just do the same thing I always do. Just kind of, show up and try to follow some of the horses I've been following throughout the spring and the Triple Crown season. No, I really don't treat them any differently. It's pretty much the same deal, just a different circle.
I will say this, Saratoga, and this was a point, I've always sort of intuitively approached it this way, and Mike Maloney really crystallized it for me when he described it as more of an angle meet than most, because you have horses coming in from all over, and you have so many horses like laid out to try to win these races because of the added importance they take on. That traditional handicapping obviously is essential, but there's maybe a little bit more to be gained by finding the horses who've been racing at Belmont, but really prepping the whole time. And so their form might say they're not quite good enough for Saratoga, but you know this barn does this every year. I think of a trainer like George Weaver on the turf, especially with like young developing horses. I never want to forget, you know, if I'm just handicapping that A other than on the first weekend or maiden race on the first weekend, and I'm taking that Belmont form too literally, it might put me off a horse who I know from looking at his ROI in these spots that they are liable to improve 5 to 10 figure points. So, and I haven't done it this year, but I will in other years try to take a look at last year's charts, and Formulator is the greatest tool for this, and just start digging around in the Formulator trainer profile. I'm not a huge trainer profile guy, you know, in and out. I will look, a question comes up in the PPs, I will Google to see how this guy does off the layoff, or how this guy does with two-year-olds, or how this woman does, you know, with turf fillies or whatever it is. I'll do that once or twice a card, sometimes not much more than that. But for me, like Saratoga, I do think it makes sense to spend some real time and take a look at trainers, especially trainers who've won with prices, and try to find some sort of under-the-radar angles. And I haven't really done it this year. I mean, just ones that leap to mind, though, that Weaver one for sure. Jonathan Shepherd used to be a guy. Now, obviously, he didn't win at Saratoga last year for the first time in umpteen million years or whatever it was. So I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have the stock at this point. But it used to be him off certain layoffs where the horses were clearly just pointed to Saratoga. I forget what it was. I wrote a piece for Horse Player magazine, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, where I was just trying to track different Saratoga trainer angles, and that was a good one. But folks can do their own work, and feel free, if you find something cool that you want to share, feel free to tweet us about it or send us to the podcast email. We'll give you credit. We'll talk about some of these Saratoga-specific angles. Now, I know you're more of a fundamental handicapper, JK, but does that idea appeal to you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that trainer intent is always one that one of the most, you know, heavy angles to me, and really that's all I really use Formulator for, is trainer intent rather than using it for like trainer like angles. I get trainer angles, but they're so hit or miss that I just prefer try to understand, you know, use those to back up a story. If that makes sense.
Define it a little bit more. What do you mean when you're talking about intent versus an angle? I mean, I think a lot of people think of those as one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they are kind of the same. It's just like, it's hard to say. I'm just not crazy about 4 for 17 blinkers off. I just don't really care about that.
Well, one thing that I will say is when people are very selective about trainer angles, like an angle like blinkers off, for example, I just see no reason why you wouldn't look for, I'm just making this up, it's not a specific thing, but I would want to look at the 5-year sample. I would want to really look at as much data as I could. And you will see people just like cherry picking what I'd call selective endpoints and looking at blinkers off in the last 18 months. And it's like, well, there's nothing magic about the last 18 months, so why not just look at the last 5 years? I mean, I think that's a, there is some sleight of hand that can go on with trainer stats, but I think there's also a way to look at them, especially when you're looking at specific meets like Saratoga, where you're going to see trainers who have these go-to moves that can reliably make a horse, whether it's a second-time starter, a third-time starter, whatever it is, but will make a horse improve by 10 or 15 points. And I think that's what we're looking for. In a day and age where so much of the money is either being bet mechanically via computer-oriented players, or just even a lot of fundamental handicappers who are really wedded to the numbers, when you can sort of have in your back pocket, this horse is going to run 5 or 10 points more, when you can find an angle that hints to that, that's where you can really get some value out of it, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I just It's a tricky thing. It really is. I feel like it was misleading me too much when I was diving too deep into them. Let me think about it. We can revisit it next week because there's an emotion I'm trying to explain and I just haven't. That was just my gut reaction and there's probably more to it I need to dig up.
Please do. It's an interesting topic. And obviously, I mean, I think we both think this stuff can be valuable. And maybe by talking it through, we can help the listeners refine their own use. I think intuitively you're saying about, you know, you don't want to spend too much time going down these rabbit holes that aren't directly related to horse's form, because more often than not, it's the horse's form that's going to dictate the outcome of the race. So it's just hard to figure out how to efficiently work trainer work into the rest of your handicapping. But sometimes it can be so valuable that it absolutely is worth taking the time. So we'll contradicting ourselves here a little bit, but we'll talk about it more. I think the Saratoga meet is a perfect one. We are out of time, my friend. Any closing thoughts for this podcast?
No, good luck this weekend. Should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatale. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled Tuesday show. Until then, may you win all your photos.